Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are talking about the 2012 film Looper, written and directed by Rian Johnson. Here to discuss the film with me is a special guest. Actually, it's just Cruz. Hi, Cruiser.
What up, bitches?
Before digging into Looper, I would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, Cruz, what adult beverage are you drinking tonight?
Just a beer.
Just a plain old can of brew.
Not a can, a bottle. Nobody drinks out of cans. This isn't
1994. Oh. Cans are... Hi.
Well, I'm eating pizza and watching football, so you gotta.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. That seems right. I'm fancier than you, so.
Of course.
I'm having a little nighttime Bloody Mary action.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I got rid of all the grapefruit, so I was like, well, I've got a bunch of Tabasco sauce and a bunch of Bloody Mary mix.
Bloody Mary's not my favorite.
Really?
Yeah, I can't. I don't really like tomatoes.
Hmm.
So that, you know, that would probably do it right there. I feel like I'm drinking vodka ketchup. No good.
Unlike bacon vodka, that probably vodka ketchup probably isn't going to be a big seller.
Right. Gross.
All right. Well, let's begin our discussion of Looper then, Cruz.
All right.
Time travel has not yet been invented, but 30 years from now, it will have been. I am one of many specialized assassins in our present called Loopers. So when criminal organizations in the future need someone gone, they zap him back to me. And I eliminate the target from the future.
Oh la la.
Loopers are well paid. We live the good life. And the only rule is, never let your target escape. Even if your target is you.
I'm gonna fix this! I'm gonna fight him! I'm gonna kill him!
Time travel crap just fries your brain like an egg.
So here is the description for, briefly, for the film Looper. And before we really get into the description and the discussion, this is going to be a spoiler episode. So, usually we talk about an older film, but this one obviously still is in theaters. So if you have not seen it and are planning on seeing it, then you may want to pause and come back after you've seen it, because we're going to spoil stuff. A lot. Spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here is the description. A hired gun from the future discovers that his greatest adversary is himself in this twisting sci-fi mindbender starring Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Written and directed by Rian Johnson, the film begins in the year 2047 and time travel has yet to be invented. 30 years later, however, it has. Though immediately outlawed, time travel technology is quickly appropriated by the mob and used to cleanly dispose of anyone deemed a threat. The process is simple. When the mob wants someone to disappear, they simply send them back to 2047, where an assassin known as a looper quickly carries out the hit and disposes of the body. Joe is one of those loopers. Each kill earns him a big payday, and he's got big plans to retire to France. Then one day, as Joe patiently awaits the appearance of his next target near the edge of a remote cornfield, he comes face to face with his future self. When the younger Joe hesitates, his older counterpart makes a daring escape. Now, in order to avoid the wrath of his underworld boss, young Joe must close the loop and kill his older self. Meanwhile, the revelation that a powerful crime boss in the future has set the underworld ablaze pits the two Joes on a violent collision course with the fate of a devoted mother and her young son hanging in the balance. So, Cruz, normally we would talk about our history with this film, but we don't really have a history with this film.
Well, I helped him write it, but other than that, no.
And you consoled Joseph Gordon-Levitt whenever he needed it.
Oh, man, there were a lot of hugs. A lot of hugs.
A lot of hugging going on in this.
A lot of touching, yes.
Yes. It was PG, though. Just touching.
I'm sure, whatever you want to think. It's fine.
So, I guess we were going to originally do this as part of our time travel month. And then things kind of got pushed back with Disney going 2 months, and now we're going to do time travel next month. So the Podshots episodes have kind of been priming the pump for the time travel discussions, because last Podshots episode we did Donnie Darko, which is a time travel film, and then now we're doing Looper, and then next month we'll do probably two more time travel episodes, So I guess what I want to talk about first is just the cast overall, and then we can get into some of the specific points that we liked or didn't like and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So let's talk about Joe. Let's talk about Joseph Gordon-Levitt wearing the Bruce Willis prosthesis to make him look more like Bruce Willis. What did you think, first of all, of the look of him, and then what did you think of his character and his performance?
I feel like he followed Bruce Willis around for like 3 months.
Wasn't he very close?
Yes, he was very Bruce Willis.
Like, yeah, I thought it was really close.
Yeah, and he, you know, when we had seen this on a trailer for another movie that we'd gone to see, I thought, I'm like, oh, that must be Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And then I saw him again. I'm like, it can't be. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's the movies. They can make you look however you want to look. Yeah, he almost doesn't even look like himself at all.
Well, what's strange is I remember seeing that, and I'm looking at him in the trailer, and I'm like, well, that's him,
mm-hmm.
but he looks funny. Like, why does he look weird? And I didn't know that it was supposed to, like, I figured out, you know, at the end of the trailer that it was supposed to be Bruce Willis.
Right.
But I was like, what is it that, like, why does he look different? And I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then what was strange was during this film, I remember watching it and I got so accustomed to how he looked in the film. I was like, well, what does he look like normally? And I was trying to think like, oh yeah, okay. Cause I'm thinking of, is this how he looked in Dark Knight? And I was like, no, like, what does his normal face look like?
Yeah,
like it took me a little bit.
Like a, I don't know. He has like a different, I mean, it's not
the eyebrows and the nose are a little.
Yeah, different. Of course. But like watching it, I was, like when he has the little meeting with Jeff Daniels.
Mm-hmm, with Abe.
Yeah, and he's talking to him and just the mannerisms and everything. I feel like I was watching young Bruce Willis. Like they did, I think he did a really great job. And I think the makeup was it was pretty good, but I feel like it was more him that sold it for sure.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same page on this one because I think that it's the mannerisms that what sells it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can, yeah, he's, I mean, they look similar, but it's the sort of like eyes closed smirk thing that he does and just the way that he moves his hands and the way that his body language is.
Right, yeah.
To where I'm like, oh my God, like, he looks like a younger version of Bruce Willis.
Right. Weird. He should be in a movie where Bruce is older.
It's almost like he's trying to be Bruce Willis.
Right. Hater. I feel like copying, really.
Yeah, really. I mean, all he's doing is copying him.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? No, but I think that that's good. I kind of like that the main kill, like going into more of the character, I like that this Joe guy isn't a very likable character, really. Like, he's your protagonist, but he's not, like, a great guy.
Right. Well, he, first of all, he works for the mob.
Yeah, and he's a killer, sure.
And, apparently these loopers, they are not really seen as being very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because they give him the gun that they can only shoot a certain amount away because they're too dumb to figure out how to aim or something, basically, is what I got from that. But yeah, and then he, you know, he takes his friend in, but just like fucking does not want to, for sure. He did not want to help him.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? You were lousy and there will be blood, so I'm not going to take you in and help.
God, he was so like ridiculous.
Yeah, well, see, Paul Dano, I have problems with anyway.
Yeah.
I just think he's such like, I'm sure that he's going for the sniveling shit of a character all the time.
Yes.
But every time I see him, I just want someone to punch him.
Well, I feel like he's either a really good actor or he is just like that in real life. Like, I want to see an interview with him so I can just tell myself that he's not a total toolbox.
Yeah, that would be really interesting if he was, like, all suave and put together. And
I know. Hey, ladies.
Yeah.
No way.
Like, oh, wow, he's great.
Didn't Daniel Day-Lewis, like, punch you in the back of the head?
After he drank his milkshake.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then he ends up giving him up just because
yeah.
He get in trouble. Like, so he, I mean, like, I think they set the precedent there to show that by the time he gets to Emily Blunt and the kid, that it's not going to be like, oh my God, this is going to be the best love story ever. He's super great. And they're going to fall in love. You know what I mean? Like, because I think that his character is to the point where like, I thought he was just going to shoot them both in the head.
Sure. Well, let's talk about Sarah Emily Blunt before we talk about the Bruce Willis stuff. So yeah, Emily Blunt is playing a pretty unflattering role, really. Like I from the trailer, I assumed that it was her as the stripper hooker character.
Oh, I thought she would have been more of like a some sort of helper, like intelligent.
Mm.
Like there was a different character that I was planning for her, but I didn't write this. I didn't write all of it. So.
You just helped him.
Right.
Because in the trailer, it turns out to be, is it Piper Perabo or something Perabo, like
that? Which is perfect because she's dumb.
Yeah. She was in Coyote Ugly. She's dumb.
I know. That was about it.
It ends up her kind of being the stripper. And that was an interesting choice because I don't really find her that alluring. I think I like Emily Blunt in some of her other films much more as a character like that.
Girl crush on Emily Blunt, like
you did.
I do.
Oh,
think great. So, yeah. I mean, and I don't think that they were trying to get the hottest girl for that role as the stripper because she looks, you know, she looks tired and she's like, you know, just looking at the clock while she's talking to him and she's a kid and she wants to, you know, like she's not supposed to be like this 100% put together person. Like they want to show that she's kind of crappy too, mm-hmm. I guess.
You know, that's one of the things that I like about the cast in general is that I think all of the characters are written in a way that no one seems completely like they have everything figured out.
Right.
That everyone's got like some kind of problem. And
yes.
In a film that is a time travel film, I think that's really important because this way you don't have your generic good guy, your generic bad guy, and they're not like a white hat and a black hat to where one's, you know, one's John Wayne and one's an evil character.
Right, because you feel sympathy for both of these characters. Both of the Joes.
Yeah.
You are torn between which one, you know, you want to die, really. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing. Like the whole time I'm like, is he going to kill him? But he didn't want to kill him, obviously. I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
But, 'cause he would die then.
Right, right. So we have Sarah's character who she's, I think it's interesting when they decide to take a British actress
mm-hmm.
and make her like Midwestern.
Right.
Like I like to see their interpretations of what an accent that would be, you know, our accent, Cruz.
Yeah.
And she gets a little bit country and a little bit like, you get off my farm.
Yeah. And then a couple times when she's trying to be serious, she gets a little bit British.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, it'd be hard for me to do a British accent during a whole movie, so
not
I
true,
guess you gotta
so.
Give her.
You'd have no problems.
I wouldn't. I could do like Cockney. Oh, it's like my favorite. So, yeah, I mean, I heard that too. I heard, like, right at the beginning, I think, or when she was, like, had the gun and she was threatening that weirdo with the weird homeless guy or whatever.
Oh, the retarded guy.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this? I was like, what's really this retarded guy doing? It was just like, what, it was kind of like a backstory of when there was, like, tons of vagrants, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I get it, but, I mean, because the picture that they paint of 2040 whatever is kind of bleak and pretty disgusting. So I wasn't surprised when I was surprised. I didn't expect that guy to come out of the cornfield. Kind of weird. I thought we were doing Children of the Corn, you know, part two or something, but
that should have been one of the worst for Halloween, because that's those are terrible movies.
Yeah, they are.
So then we have, we have Sarah, and she's kind of your protector character, and then we have Sid, who is played by Pierce Gagnon, or something like that, the little kid.
Right, with the chubby cheeks.
Yeah, the chubby cheeks, dark-haired kid, who has some crazy facial expressions in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
And I feel like those are ripe for, like, internet mocking, but I think in the film, I think that he works really well in the film, actually.
Yeah.
And that character is pretty interesting. Like, I like the dynamic to where Sarah feels like she's failed him and he doesn't call her his mother.
Because she really is his mom, right?
Yeah, she is biologically his mother, is what I took from it.
Right, because, you know, he said that she wasn't, that his real mom was her sister, but then she explained that she had a kid and wanted to party, which I was totally like, no, I get it.
Is your last name Cruz, Sarah?
I'm like, wait a minute, you can leave your kids with other people? Gee.
Brad, no. Maybe we should.
No, we shouldn't. Yeah, and when she, I'm just going to say it, this kid creeped me out from the second I saw him. Like, I know that they made him cute, so people would be like, oh, he's cute, but I'm like, he is fucking creepy.
He's
like,
got a nasty look.
Yes. And he's smart. Like, I mean, did you not know right away that was the kid they were looking for?
Well, it had to have been. I mean,
right.
There, and some of the things that people are acting like are huge complaints about the film, or that are making a huge stink about. It's like, well, of course, you know, the type of movie that this is, they're going to have a lot of convenient things happen, because that's just, yeah. It's a time travel movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I heard immediately after seeing this was, well, why don't they just teleport him into the fire that he drops him off in? Because there's no story then. Like, they need loopers to shoot people. They can't just, from the future, they can't just transport him into that disposal place that he dumps them into.
Oh, that's probably, I mean, that's a good problem solver right there. But
yeah, it's like, there's no movie then.
Right. I mean, that's like saying, you know, that's like when everyone's like, why didn't Jack and Rose share the door? Because that's the fucking point, is like, he dies. Like, the whole point is the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it is convenient, but I think the fact that the audience knew, I mean, most of the people, I mean, Brad figured it out, that kid was obviously the creeper kid.
I love that's the common, like, the Joe average film watcher. Well, Brad figured it out, so shit.
So, I mean, like,
how hard was it really to figure?
Shut up. That's not what I meant. Because he told me during the movie, because that's what I...
He did his lean over and was like, anyway. That's going to be the maker.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brad. Yes.
Weird. And I'm like, yeah, I told you that already in my head. But the fact that they didn't know for sure that creeper kid was the Rainmaker made it a better... It almost made it better, like, not better, more intense when Bruce Willis killed that kid, because I'm like, you know that kid's not the guy?
So yeah.
So just, like,
that,
randomly...
And that was unfortunate. Like, that whole... Like, the first kid that he kills, and then I kind of was expecting him to kill Piper's child.
Right. He was working on it until that creeper kid was in there.
Yeah, until the young whatever, young something. I forget his name.
What is his name?
I can look that up real quick. His name, Kid Blue, was his name, played by Noah Segan.
Right.
But yeah, so he was kind of he was a character that it's one of those where it's almost like the evil version of Paul Dano where I'm glad to see him get beat up.
Yeah.
Every time he was on screen, I was like, God, this guy's such a little fuck. I was waiting for him just to mess up and get hit.
But I guess, I guess like everybody that is in that business is kind of, really heartless and doesn't care. I mean, they have a job to do and it's like they'd get killed if they didn't do what they were supposed to. But the dynamic between that what's that kid? The one that's annoying? Seth?
Are you talking about the
sniveling kid?
The sniveling guy?
Yeah.
Paul Dano? His name's Paul Seth. Dano. Yeah.
And Jeff Daniels' character is really weird to me. The whole I'm gonna make you proud of me thing that's going on there. You know what I mean?
No.
Well,
Are you talking about the kid Blue, the guy with the big gun?
No, Paul isn't Seth the one. Seth is Paul Dano. He's like the one that's like, because Jeff Daniels is like the head of the mob,
right? And Paul Dano went and couldn't kill his older self, so then he went to Joe's and.
Oh no! Sorry, you're right. You're right.
Okay.
I'm thinking about the kid that shot himself.
Yeah, Kid Blue is the guy with the long gun.
Right. Yep, that's the kid I'm thinking of.
Okay.
The dynamic between them.
Him and Abe, yes.
He's disgusting. Is weird. Like, is he wanting him to be a father figure to him, or is he
You know what I thought was going to happen for a while was I was thinking maybe Jeff Daniels is the older version of this guy.
Oh.
Is what I kept thinking. And it ended up not being the case, and I was like, oh. And Jeff Daniels just ended up being a guy that was a crime boss kind of thing.
That would have been interesting because they did send him from the future.
Yeah, and so I was like, well, there's got to be a point to that. Like, wouldn't the reason be is because he's this younger person and I don't know.
Oh, and then he could have, like, saved that kid because he was saving himself.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That didn't happen, though.
Old Bruce just gave him one right in the dome. Told Jeff Daniels.
Good. Funny. It was like Jeff Daniels as the remake of The Big Lebowski. He's just like walking around with a robe on, doesn't give a shit. all right. That's all I have about that.
Oh, okay. So what did you think of, Bruce Willis in the movie? Because we didn't really talk about him.
The thing that I thought was really interesting and really added to me was the backstory about when he goes to France and then he gets bored and then he starts doing other naughty stuff, like that whole thing where he meets his wife.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me a lot more, empathy toward him when everything else like came crumbling down on him. Cause you're like, God, he got his shit together and all of a sudden they find him and just like, it was pretty tough. So like, that's why I felt sorry for him. Cause if that wife thing wouldn't have come to play and he was just some sort of bag that was like, shooting guns out of cars in the streets, I wouldn't have given a shit.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful in the storytelling part. Cause like, all you wanted him to do was like, and that was so fucked up. Like, he was kept trying to remember her, to make sure that.
Oh yeah, that was really like, that was like a pulling on your heartstrings kind of moment.
Yeah, that was intense.
Because you're like, oh fuck, like how, like, because that's one of those where you walk away from this movie and you're thinking, oh, that was cool, and this scene was cool, and that looked neat, and I can't believe this part, but the heart of the film is Bruce Willis thinking about his wife and trying not to lose her.
Yeah.
And that's something that separates this for me from just any other time travel movie to where it's instantly forgettable once you get past the cool looking stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's about, and one of the scenes that I'll put at the end of this, end of the show is a clip from this where it talks about what the movie's all about a mother saving her son and all that sort of thing. And about a husband trying to save his wife and that. It's right when Joe makes the decision that he makes.
right.
to axe himself.
Right.
It's that little scene, and I really like that, the way that that's written. And I guess we can go from there, unless you have anything else to say about any of the actors?
No.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the scenes that were memorable then. And I want to say, as an overall thing, is I really love how Rian Johnson writes the voiceover. And not only this, but in the movie Brick, I think that Rian Johnson writing and Joseph Gordon-Levitt performing voiceover is a really nice match, because as soon as the voiceover kicks in, I felt like I had this feeling of, oh, everything's going to be okay. This is going to be good. Like, it wasn't, okay. it wasn't like a, like, real clunky, crappy sounding, like, a voiceover to, I don't know if it was just the way that it was written or the way that it was performed, but I was like, I could settle in and settle into the movie and not, you know, be apprehensive about, oh, I hope this is good or anything like that.
Right. I hear what you're saying. They're like, just sit back and chillax. We got this.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it kind of continues throughout, and they use it fairly sparingly, but I really do like that. I think Rian Johnson's a really good writer, actually. So what's one of the scenes that you remember? What's one of the ones that you tend to enjoy out of this one?
Well, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but I thought it was really awesome, is when they get young Seth,
mm-hmm.
and old Seth is trying to make a run for the railroad tracks,
mm-hmm.
and they do the scratch in the arm, and then, like, body parts are just falling off of him, and that is, like, nuts.
That is fucked up. Doing. Yeah.
You're like, oh my god, they cut his whole hand off! And then it just gets worse, to where he's almost like a lump as soon as he gets to the door.
Yeah, like, it got to the point where, because they get rid of, like, he's driving and his foot falls off.
Yes!
And I was shit.
And, I mean, like, the funny thing is, like, you don't see any blood, you know, on his end.
Yeah.
You can just, like, it's almost worse trying to picture, like, how they're cutting off the other guy.
Well, yeah, the worst part for me was the nose removal.
Yeah, oh, you look like Michael Jackson on that South Park.
Yes, he did, and I was like, oh, no.
Lincoln!
And then as soon as he gets to the door and he's struggling, I was sitting there thinking, like, why bother?
No, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, at least take a train trip for, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's like, you've got nothing left, guy. Just cash it in.
That was nuts. And then, you know, I thought that was going to be a recreation when Bruce Willis did it, but that turned out, I thought that was really clever.
That was clever with the Beatrix.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really liked that line to where they said that there was a different waitress that worked there. And her name was, like, Jill or Jan or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, that would have saved you some letters or shorter or something.
Right. That whole scene between them where they actually got to talk instead of just, like, shooting, you know, like, with guns and trying to knock each other unconscious was in the cafe. Like, you could totally tell that, and I'm not going to be like, this is a movie about growing up, because it's obviously not, but, like, there's so much shit that young Joe had no idea about, that old Joe was like, you are a fucking idiot. Like,
yeah.
Let me tell you this. This happens. Like, this can happen to you. You're really, you know, casual with your lifestyle, blah, 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 you know, and he was, like, so bullheaded about it. Like, he's like, I don't care what you have to say, old man. That is me.
Right.
So
you don't know me.
Right. He's like, no, I totally do know you. So,
yeah.
And, like, right at the beginning when, like, he, you know, he runs away from him, but he figures out he's going back to his apartment. So he, Bruce Willis goes to try to save his ass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you idiot. Like, it's just really funny to me. Like, cause, you know, it's the same person, but it almost feels like a dad and a son.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does. And I like the fact that when you're watching that scene for the first time, you know that, you know, that young Joe is in trouble a little bit, but he still seems to, like, have things not, like, figured out, but he doesn't seem completely lost.
Right.
You know, he's, like, good at his job, and he's, you know, he's capable. He's not, like, a complete fuck. But then when you see Bruce Willis watching him, you realize, oh, now this is the guy that really knows what he's doing.
Right. He, like, because you almost feel, like, better that he's there in case shit goes wrong you know, because he could, like, protect, you know, because you know he wants to protect himself. He doesn't want him to die when he's, like, 30 or however old he's supposed to be.
Right.
So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And it's just so, you know, it's just so fun because, like, this is the only time travel movie is the only way you're ever going to get that dynamic and the only, you know, the only way that's ever going to work out for you. So I just thought it was a really good way that they handled it, I guess.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that a lot, too. That was actually the first thing that I had written down was the limbs falling off Bruce following his younger self.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned it earlier, but I really like the fact that they do follow Joseph Gordon-Levitt as he gets older.
Yes.
And they go through that whole thing where it's like, well, you know, if he just would kill this guy, let's see what happened. Let's see how he turns into Bruce Willis.
Right.
And it's kind of shocking to me that he... I guess in a typical movie, I would expect a... He goes to Paris, everything's fine. Or he goes to China in this case, everything's fine. And that's all you get. But in this, it's like, well, he goes there. And after a while, he's like, well, fuck, I don't have anything to do. I might as well stir up some shit.
Right. And he almost, I feel like he does worse things when he gets out of the mob than he did when he was, like, controlled by them.
Yeah.
He's, like, shooting gun, like, I mean, it's cool, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't, and, so in the future, everyone's gonna do drugs with their eye drops?
Yeah.
Is that what goes on? That's nuts.
That would be crazy because that's a thing where the first thing that I thought of when I saw that was, I wonder what that looks like if that were to go bad. Because as soon as I think of drugs, I think of the Requiem for a Dream stuff.
Ugh, fuck that.
And we've talked about that like at the very beginning of the podcast where his arm is so messed up.
Oh, and I'm
like,
gross.
And I'm like, I wonder what the eye equivalent of that would be.
I know. I mean, like, I have contacts. I mean, isn't that going to screw me up? Just saying.
You just have to wear your glasses and do it. Put your glasses on after.
I don't. I look like Sarah Palin with my glasses on. So
then you'd be really messed up if you had to just keep your glasses off, no contacts.
Oh my god.
Because the world was like spinning for him when he first used it.
Well, and I mean, that just like makes my eyes burn thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I think. Like, no, thank you. No.
I'll just drink my beers and whatnot.
Yeah, at least I know where that's going in my stomach. Yeah. So. But anyway, that was a small detail, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's nice that it's, you know, not only is your main character a murderer, but he's also a junkie.
Right. Oh, yeah. And he has to, like, get clean. Like, Emily Blunt, like, has to make him, or Sarah, whatever her name is, she has to, like, get, like, detox him, basically.
Yeah, and I like that relationship a lot because it would have been so easy, and I kept waiting for this to happen. When Joseph Gordon-Levitt wakes up and sees Emily Blunt, and then at the same time, old Joe is looking, trying to remember his wife's face.
Yes.
I kept waiting for that locket to change into Emily Blunt's face. Those two would have ended up together, and that's kind of like your romantic comedy kind of ending.
Which would have sucked.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, oh, don't do it. Don't go in that direction. And it didn't.
It did not.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about is we have this situation with this kid who is called the Rainmaker. And they have a couple of things that they sort of move through quickly and are just kind of like not real concerned with. And they sort of want the audience just to kind of go with them, which I don't have a problem with. But I was reading some different reviews today and some of them bring up this as something that they didn't quite enjoy with the film. But they talk about the whole nature versus nurture argument. And they talk about how, you know, Sid is this destructive force. Emily Blunt is barely keeping control of him now. She has a safe that she locks herself in, which I was like, what the fuck is this? When she locks herself in there. And I was like, wow, that's weird. But she locks herself in the safe, and so the conceit of the film is that if she's not killed and the son doesn't get even more angry, then she will be able to control him. And that's something that you just kind of have to go with, because there's no real, like, there's no real proof as far as a film would, you know, goes, that she's going to be able to handle him. Because up until this point, she's got a real tenuous grip on him to begin with.
Right.
It's not like she's, you know, changing his mind and making him more controllable. Like, he's doing whatever he wants to do already.
And were you supposed to get a glimpse of that at the very end when she, like, talked him down?
Yeah, maybe. When she's like, that's a good boy and all that stuff.
Right. She's like, look at me. Look at me. I'm beautiful. Because she is. You know.
She doesn't. This is not her most glamorous role, though.
No, but.
She looks good in the Adjustment Bureau.
God, doesn't she? Anyway, so what is your thought? You were okay with going along with that whole thing?
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing with the time travel stuff where they're like, well, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do this? Well, this is what the movie's telling you is the way that things are. Like, it's saying that this is how time travel works, and it's saying that if this mother survives, everything will be okay. And to where I don't know if the movie gives quite enough for me to say, oh, I get it 100%, but I can go along with it fine. Like, it didn't bother me. What, I mean, is that what you thought, that she would be able to handle him, or?
Absolutely not. I would have clocked that little shit in the head. By the time we got to the end of this movie, I was so in gangster mode that I was like, I cannot believe he found that kid in the cornfield and did not just put a bullet right through his head.
Mm-hmm.
How could you not?
So it's like that, it's like the baby Hitler argument where, you know, even though he is still a baby, you just axe him anyway, just because of the potential of what he could become.
If I had the chance?
Yeah.
Yes?
So it's like it's his nature in this little kid, to where the mom's not going to be able to change him.
If her character was different,
mm-hmm.
I think I might... Okay, and I'm not, like, not 100% on... I wasn't, like, disgusted when I left the movie theater. I'm like, sure. Okay, I can see how she can help him be not a crazy-eyed psycho. But, like, I was definitely, like, I couldn't believe, like, you know, it's the best ending that I think could have been, mm-hmm. is what the ending was. I just couldn't get behind her being able to control him. And not just control him, but, like, to the point where, like, he could see how using his X-Men powers for good instead of evil would be a better thing.
Because
mm-hmm. she doesn't seem convincing enough to me. Like, if the kid gets mad and you run out of the room, you're probably not a good parent.
Yeah, because he got super pissed and she just said, fuck it, and got into her safe.
Yes, if she would have been a stronger character, like, I felt there was, like, conviction behind her actually being able to help him, I would have been 100% on board with this. I'd have been like, oh my god, she's going to commit to this. She's going to do exactly what she can and everything's going to turn out right. But I'm like, she is so fragile right now, I thought, as far as like being able, because he doesn't think she's his mom. You know, she is having trouble controlling him now. Like, I just was like, really?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, what if, like, I like the idea of the safe to, you know, protect her, because it demonstrates how powerful he can be.
Right.
But for her to run in there, it sort of lessens her control over him.
Exactly. Well,
so, I mean, if they had it there, but they didn't really allude to what it was, and she talked him down in that scene instead of let him freak out, would that have changed her mind at all? Or if they had if they had another scene where she talks him down.
Where she thought about going in the safe, and then she was like, no, I gotta be, like, strong about this.
Like, maybe she goes in the safe the first time, and then he's gonna freak out again. And
the second time, she's like, I gotta be able to handle this. Like, yeah. She just talks herself into it, and, like, I would have felt a little bit better about him just letting that child be unleashed on the world.
Sure.
I guess.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, that's something that... you know, maybe that's a deleted scene or something like that. Like, I would like to think that there's an extended
right,
bit of info with, you know, those two.
Like I said about the ending, like, That is definitely how it should have ended. He should have broken the cycle or whatever he needed to do, but...
Closing the loop, kind of.
Yeah, I just don't... I just couldn't get behind her, like, because I know so much about parenting, but, like, I feel like she was... He was just, like, crazy eyes, and she was barely hanging on, and so I'm like, she's not going to do anything. She's not going to be able to help him. He's going to end up blowing her head up with his brain.
Wait until he's, like, a tween. And he really starts getting attitude.
See, and he kills someone at school, you know, and he comes home and he's all mad. And
yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
there's bad news coming with that kid.
Right. I want to believe that she's going to be able to help him, but like, he's 5 and he's nuts. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the last things that I have on here, do you have any other notes or any comments that you want to say? I've got one more, and then that's about it that I had.
The other thing about that kid that I thought was kind of cool is when his friend comes back. What is that guy's name? The one that goes to the house and then comes back.
Oh, the dad from, what's that Fox show?
Raising Hope.
Raising Hope, yeah.
Yeah. Cause he's like not fooled.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the kid's falling down the stairs and Joe runs over to catch him, and she runs over to get him the hell out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're like, oh, God, because you know something, like, because you think, oh, they're both running to help. And then, like, in a split second, you're like, oh, no, the house is going to blow up. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of cool.
That scene where he's, like, ripping them apart in midair.
God.
That was fucking awesome.
Well, and then you thought that was going to happen again at the end in the field.
Yes,
and then she ends up talking him down. And that's where you can see like the glimpse of everything maybe being okay.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, shotgun.
Yeah. And that's one of those where I'm like, that is, we talked earlier about how the film has the aspects of stuff to take away other than, oh, that looks cool. But it also has plenty of, wow, how did they do that? And that looks really neat. And the Raising Hope's dad getting it was definitely one of the, holy shit, does that look cool.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about the wife in the future and what happens to her. Because the film is focused on, you know, the greater good is if, you know, is if this child's allowed to live and raise the right way and doesn't become this rainmaker and doesn't kill all the loopers and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce Willis's character is back because he's trying to save his wife who was killed because of him. And the wife, you know, she's got a little bit of sass because she flips him off the first time you see her.
Right.
And she seems to be exactly what he needs, and they're obviously in love, and they were trying to have a kid, and they couldn't have a kid. And they have this life together and everything's happy, and that's completely ripped away from the audience. Because Bruce is killed, so she doesn't, like, she exists or will exist, but she's not relevant for the story anymore. And I thought that was so unfortunate. It's like you had to lose something, but it was too bad that, you know, maybe she doesn't find any sort of happiness either because she doesn't have him. And, you know, so she's stuck with sort of an unhappy ending where, you know, the general populace has a happy ending. You know what I mean?
Or maybe it's like Young Joe said, she might be better off without you.
Mm. Maybe. Now, that's the pessimism in you coming out because I don't see it that way.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, and I mean, obviously I liked, you know, that what they were doing. They were obviously in love and they had a good thing going, but he's like, he brought up a good point though. She's dead because of you.
Right.
So, I mean, she might not have the best life ever that like find her true love or whatever people seem to believe in. And, but she's not dead. So
right.
Got that going for her. That's
that
actually optimist, Dick.
I'm trying to think about the true love they don't have, Cruz, because it's only Bruce Willis for her, in my mind.
How do you know that, man?
In my mind. In my mind, that's all it is.
My mom, but that's about it. I think this really hot Asian girl could probably find somebody else to make her happy.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
I get what you're saying, though. I do get what you're saying. You know, the other end of that is she, you know, lives an okay life, but she never really is truly happy because she never gets to meet Bruce Willis, which I think Bruce Willis would make people happy. So.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting when they show her getting shot, when the guys were around there and they shoot her, and then she's just kind of dead and that's kind of it. I was like, oh, good. Because immediately the way that my mind works, and maybe it's because I'm watching all these horror movies, is I was like, oh, I hope they don't do anything to her. Like, I hope she's just dead and that's it.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Lion King, where like they gave her a moment to like completely horribly grieve about it.
No, no, no. I was going more of like raping and stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's just really telling where we both went with that.
And so I was like, oh, well, I'm glad that she's just dead, I guess.
I'm glad that she's just dead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need any. I didn't want it to go. It was funny because I kept, like, I felt really invested in this film, I guess, because I kept wanting it to not do things that it ended up not doing. And I was like, oh, I hope it doesn't do this, and then it wouldn't do that.
Right.
You know?
Because the characters, you know, oh, it's a time travel movie and it's in the future, blah, blah, blah. But the personalities of the characters and the way that they, you know, worked all together was very believable to the point where you weren't like, ooh, it's almost like there are two options for a time travel movie. It's either a sweet action movie where you almost don't give a shit about the people, or this one I feel like is almost like a movie about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just randomly set in time travel.
Yeah, and it just happens to have time travel
right.
in it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and I think that that's something heading into next month where we're talking a lot about these sorts of films. I think we'll have some on each side of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that'll be interesting to look at. One of the other things that I forgot to mention that I really liked was I really enjoyed how Abe was, like, when he was the mob boss in charge of the loopers, I really liked how he just wanted to have a conversation with them.
Right. He seemed pretty legit, you know? Like, it was scary going in there, but once you're in there, he's like, what's up?
Yeah, I just want to have a conversation with you. And that to me is scarier than some guy that's like, ah, I'm going to just smash your hand and rip your fingers off or something.
Right. Well, in the background that they gave him, you know, they sent him back to just be in charge of the loopers, but he was so smart and so, you know, instinctive or whatever the word is, that he just decided to be in charge of the whole town, basically.
Right. And yeah. I think that that's something that if there is stuff that was cut, I feel like his character got cut. Because mm-hmm. I feel like there's more to that character that could be explored. And not that it's necessary. Yeah, not that it's slight or anything as it is, but I think that there could be more to that character and to that story.
Right. Like, so. He's actually the older one of that other kid.
Yeah, could be.
That could be a nice side story. Yeah, I feel like they cut too much of the sex out, too.
That's true. All right, whatever. So do you have anything else to say before we close this one up, Cruz?
No, I had high expectations for this, and I am very pleased to say that it was pretty much spot on what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I was really glad for it, too. I think that for those that that live in the Midwest and have a Marcus Theaters, it is a $5 movie for Wednesdays and Thursdays now for probably the next 2 weeks. So if you haven't seen it, it's going to be pretty heavily discounted for the next 2 weeks. So I'm thinking about maybe going and seeing it again, actually.
It's a Spotlight selection?
Yeah, it's a Spotlight. I just got the email earlier.
So did I.
So yeah, I really liked it. It's going to be a purchase, or at least on my like Christmas list or whenever it comes out.
Right. It's almost like, I don't want to overstep my boundaries here, but it's like in my sort of Inception range where it's like cool because it's, you know, that way, but there's also a lot of other stuff going on. So.
Yeah, to where it's a thoughtful film.
Right.
And it's one where I hope that they make more films like this, because this is not a huge budget. This is about a $30 million budget.
Oh.
So this is not one that is a gigantic Avengers Dark Knight Rises sort of thing. And it's also, it seems like anymore that Hollywood is kind of going towards the huge action spectacles and then the small independent dramas, to where this is kind of like a middle ground sort of film.
Yeah. I agree.
And I hope that, you know, this has already made its money back. So I hope that this is successful enough to where, you know, Rian Johnson gets to continue to make films. Cause like, I really liked Brick. I haven't seen The Brothers Bloom. I have not heard great things about it.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I loved it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, isn't that with Mark Ruffalo?
It's got Matt Damon in it, I think.
Am I not thinking of the same movie you're thinking of?
Oh, I don't know. It is. He did The Brothers Bloom.
It's got Adrian Brody in it.
Oh, what am I thinking? Oh, it is Mark Ruffalo. It's not Matt Damon. I was thinking of Brothers Grimm or something like that.
I loved that movie.
Oh.
It was really interesting and, I thought it was thoughtful and I think you would really like that movie actually.
Oh, well, I'll have to give that a shot then.
Alrighty.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up then, Cruiser.
All right.
Okay. So if you have any comments for the show or suggestions or movies that you would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshot, since we just talk about one film, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show under the handle at plainlabelpod, where you can also follow me. I'm at EricWilliams79, and Rachel is at RatchetTech606, and that's over at Twitter. We also do have a Facebook page where you can like the show. Just search Plain Label Podcast. You can friend us over there as well. And just like our regular show, we're going to have an Amazon link on our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. And say maybe you wanted to buy Cruz and I this movie. You could do that over there, and I would greatly appreciate it.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? Mm-hmm. People out there, if you just bought us the movie and sent it to us.
Right.
We would probably be really grateful for it and actually maybe say thank you.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I would probably even retweet something if they wanted me to. So there you go.
I'd retweet anything. Picture.
Yeah, whatever you want. So anyway, if you click on the links and buy that movie or any of the other movies that we've talked about on Podshots or our regular show, we do get a little bit of that money from Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything extra. So we would like to hear what you think. So write us an iTunes review or give us a star rating over there. That would be fantastic. So next up, next week is our final Halloween-themed podcast for October. It's Cruz and I are going to talk about the best or some of our favorites or some of the films that we think are very interesting in the Halloween type genre. So thank you for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks, I guess, with another Podshots episode with another co-host and another film.
Then I saw it. I saw a mom who would die for her son. A man who would kill for his wife. A boy, angry and alone, laid out in front of him the bad path. I saw it. And the path was a circle.